You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Guidepost. As we near the 200th episode, I think of all the wonderful conversations, awesome guests we've had on here, and really appreciate everyone listening to us talk about super nuanced, slightly boring, highly complicated topics for what we love, the fish. So today I got Bailey and Mario joining me, and just by saying those names, I bet y'all can guess what we're going to talk about, and it's going to be menhaden in the Gulf. So I appreciate you two knuckleheads. I know you're busy. I know life's been crazy. I appreciate you hopping on here. How's everybody doing?
Doing good. Just recovering from Christmas travel.
You were on the road, man. You had that white line fever. You were driving all around Central U.S. of A, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's nice to be back in one place.
Boy, went from kind of the flatland of the mountains in between and back again, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, Jeez. Sir.
Mario, how was Christmas? How was New Year's? I hope your daughter had the time of her life.
It was a blast. It was great getting to spend time with family, finally recovering from a food coma, so doing good.
What did you get her that gym thing that you were talking about, that half dome? Little playground. Yeah. Wasn't there a Barbie dream house in there too?
Oh yeah. She's spoiled to say the least. We got her that little half done play set, and I think I've played on it more than she has, climbing all over it in the yard.
She'll get around to it, man. She'll get around to it. You know, they, sometimes the stuff they love the most is stuff that they remember that they got 3 months later. It's kind of, She's still into Santa, right? She's so little.
Yeah. Santa brought her like a little toy bow and arrow. So we've been walking around the house, stalking all the deer on the wall.
Bailey got one of those from Santa this year too.
A toy bow.
A toy specific one with the little suction cup one on the end.
Yeah. I can't use a real one yet.
Dude, when I was a kid, there was an incident in the neighborhood. I was a little kid and I had one of those sets. And some like bully had, you know, hit one of our friends or something, and we all marched over to his house, and I took the suction cup thing off the bow, and shot him. I hit him right in the forehead and knocked him cold. And we had to drag him like kind of to his front porch, just ring the doorbell and run. I thought I killed him for like 2 weeks. Back in those days, that was pretty normal. But don't take the suction cups off those things, kids. You hit somebody in the right spot, you'll knock them silly. But anyway, let's talk about Menhaden, Louisiana. So first off, let's just cover what the heck is going on, why we're doing the podcast, how people can get engaged, the process, the very highly complicated, laborious, time-consuming process of Louisiana changing anything with fisheries. And then we'll kind of get into the nuances of our points, where we stand, what's really going on. So anybody want to kick it off?
Yeah. So, you know, here we are in 2026 and we're back again with more menhaden stuff. And spoiler alert, it's the same thing we were dealing with at the end of 2025. You know, it's funny, Mario, as we were getting ready for this, I was thinking it feels like it's been ages since you and I went and did that little town hall meeting to talk about this stuff. And it is worth saying, and I'll probably say it throughout this little thing, but like, this is the danger of this. It's such a drawn out process. It's a little bit easy to kind of forget, especially going over the holidays, Christmas and Thanksgiving and New Year's and all that. You know, we still got to keep the fire on this issue and keep up the awareness, because we're still talking about buffer zones, and we're still talking about the same buffer zone that was voted on back in November. And, you know, we just opened up that public comment period now.
No doubt. I mean, it feels like that was ages ago, and, you know, but we knew when it was all kind of coming up, during the fall months, and, you know, whenever No Wake let us, you know, have that event over there, in November, we knew that was going to be the very beginning. And one of the hardest parts was just going to be staying on top of it, especially as we, you know, we went through Christmas and New Year's. It'd be very easy to, honestly, for a lot of people, kind of lose that fire on it and kind of forget about it, get swept under the rug. But, you know, as we're into the new year and we still have, you know, until the 23rd for this comment period, this is, you know, we're in the fourth quarter. This is whenever you got to make that game winning drive, and everybody's got to get back on it and get fired up and remember why we did what we did so long ago. So this is a
game winning drive. Are you practicing for the 26 LSU season? Because y'all couldn't say that this year.
I'm going to be getting in the transfer portal.
Yeah. I just
you, hit so the now it's 4,001.
I think we have like 13 guys on the roster as of right now. So maybe I've got a shot for a little revival.
If you see me out there, it's
not good.
It still hurts. Mario, you thinking about suiting up, man?
Yeah, I can. I'll be like Rudy's step cousin out there.
Hey, man, just get that sack on the last possession. Everybody will be like, Mario. Okay, so look, you know, I just want to kind of tell everyone, you know, just the nuts and bolts. So this is the way it works in Louisiana. You have to bring something up to the commission. This is how this worked. I'm sure there's a million different ways to skin a cat, but this is how this one's going to work. Bring some up to the commission. Commission has a discussion on it. That was the commission meeting back in November. And if they want to make a change, then they have to send out a notice of intent for a notice of intent. And and then that has to go out. And then there's a 30-day comment period. And after that, then this one's a little bit longer than 30 days. And then after that 30-day comment period, it comes back to the commission. And then they are supposed to review it, look at the comments. And then if they vote it forward and it gets past the commission again, then it goes to the oversight committee in the Louisiana State Legislature or not. If it doesn't go to oversight and it sits for 30 days, then it just becomes the new regulation. So right now, I think we're in a situation where, you know, if the commission voted on it once to put it out there, I'd say it probably has a pretty good chance of passing, even though it was just one vote. Now, I will say I've seen crazier things happen, and it's worth commenting on this. And, you know, obviously we'll have a lot of people in the room for that commission meeting, but there's probably a pretty good chance this goes to the legislature. And then at that juncture, you know, I think that's where we can put a little pressure on. So, you know, we have until January 23rd at 3 PM to send in a comment. And that is, jadrians@lwf.la.gov, but don't worry, we'll put that on our website. We'll put that on social media, and that's 3 p.m. on the 23rd. We'll also have a couple of talking points, some things to bring up that we think are important. And it's kind of funny, guys, because we'll get into this in a second, but everything that we think is important basically has nothing to do with this NOI. You can find the NOI if you just type in LDWF Commission Menhaden NOI. You can find the active NOI. That's a lot easier than figuring out what the URL is. But basically, when you look at the NOI, they're not removing the entire buffer zone, but they're removing key areas of the buffer zone. And that should tip us off as to why this is taking place in the first place. And it's because some of the traditional areas that they fished are in the buffer zone, which really kind of shows you it's crazy how close that they were fishing to the shoreline. And right now, Louisiana is managing this fishery on how many fish the menhaden plants can process. And I don't know how else to explain it. These people don't get paid an hourly wage. They get a percentage of fish that go through the factory. And bottom line is this, like, it's insane that any fishery is managed on how many fish can the plant process, because that's how the employees, it's utterly madness with no cap. So, and I'll say one other thing, and I'm going to kick it off to you two guys, but all of these decisions were made several years ago behind closed doors. And when you do something like that, when fisheries has to be a public process, and you shut the door and you make some little side deal, this is what happens. You're fighting over the same thing in no time. And the power of the menhaden industry in Louisiana is a little bit shocking, because they're not saying, oh my gosh, the buffer zones, our business is down so much. They went on record saying that they had a good year. You can listen to the meeting. They said, we had a good year. They're not going out of business. They just want their life to be easier. I don't know how else to put that. They just want their life to be easier. So we have a situation where a deal was made in a back room. Everyone said this was going to save redfish. Don't go to 3 redfish, go to 4. There was a cold stun in Louisiana. Even the biologists think we should have gone to 3 fish instead of 4. The kicker was the buffer zone was going to save redfish. That was literally the idiocy that we had to deal with. And now a very powerful industry has decided that they don't like the deal and that they want to fish where they want to fish, and everything else be damned. And because it was made in the back room, we are fighting over the exact same thing that we fought over not too long ago. So I will leave it at that. If anyone wants to throw anything in, your experiences, what y'all have seen, that's why you're on here. What your gut is, how you feel about this mess. I'm sure the audience would love to hear from you.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just start by saying, I mean, Tony, I think you summed it up pretty well in that the biggest disservice to this whole situation is the fact that the buffer zone was billed as a fix to the overall issue. If you look at, like, pretty much everything that they were trying to accomplish with this buffer zone, they're not going to accomplish. They just tried to take the user conflict parts of the problem out of it to get it out of people's face. And, you know, unfortunately, the associations that were getting behind on this and are still behind on this, I will say, I appreciate the fight against the menhaden, but they should take a moment to look at something that's actually effective at regulating the fishery down here instead of just a surface level issue. What's actually really funny to me about this whole thing, just to be completely, like, candid about it, is, you know, way back when this buffer zone was initially floated out as a solution, the way that I saw it is these associations thought, and at the time, I mean, they got it passed, so I guess they were right. They thought it was something that they could get over the menhaden industry on. They thought it was something that they could actually pass legislatively and with the commission, and they did. And now that's going to get removed. So we're talking about putting a Band-Aid on a bullet hole, and now we're just going to take the Band-Aid off. So what I would urge everybody listening to this is really, you know, take a look at the comment we made originally. We're going to say the same stuff again, because what we really need to be doing is pushing these commissioners to look at stuff like, and Mario, I know you can discuss the hose cage dimensions really well, so I'll leave that to you. But things like a quota, taking an average of the last 5 years, that's actually an effective way to impact this fishery and do the right thing here. This buffer zone thing is such a surface level, ticky tack deal that to me, the biggest issue I have as a guide out here is, you know, if we do win and get them to vote down this amendment to the buffer zone and everybody thinks we've saved redfish again, well, we really didn't. And we still got to get them to look at these caps. We still got to look at these hose cage changes and stuff like that. And I do worry that win or lose, you know, we got to make sure that we stay on the commission and bring up these other issues.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this whole buffer zone argument is, you know, almost as tired as a one-legged man in a butt kicking contest, because you got all these people saying that the buffer zones were supposed to come in here and they were, you know, they were going to fix this fishery. They're going to fix this fishery. You know, we're going to see redfish numbers skyrocket. You know, we're going to see speckled trout numbers. You know, everybody had this golden, you know, rose colored lens outlook on things because we were going to push the quote unquote bad guys further out. And, you know, that's a very one-sided outlook, you know, mainly from the recreational guys, because A, that's one, not taking accountability for, you know, managing those individual fisheries, whether it be red drum, speckled trout, whatever it may be. And you're putting all the blame on the commercial industry, but you're also saying we're just going to push them further out. And, you know, that's going to be out of sight, out of mind. You guys go out there further out. We don't have to worry about you anymore. And we see that all the time. We even see it in published articles by, you know, various groups where there's one figure that was published where they claim that the enforced buffer zones resulted in 81% fewer dead fish. And that is simply based upon anecdotal data, which is literally just observational data of the amount of fish you see on the shoreline from purse seine spills or from the purse seine nets tearing and allowing catch to overflow or tear out and eventually be washed on shore. So the thing is that it's kind of a null argument, because you're pushing them further offshore. So even if these spills or whatever is occurring, you're not right up on the shore. So inevitably you're probably not going to see the amount of, you know, bycatch and other catch that was in that seine wash up on the shore as you would before when they were fishing closer to the shore. So, and that kind of also goes along the same lines as, you know, there's a lot of arguments where, these supposedly definitive claims that are being made saying that, you know, incidental bycatch, like it is proven that these buffer zones, that the, you know, the half mile buffer zones are drastically reducing incidental bycatch and things of that nature and fish mortality, for instance, especially if not of game species and non-target species. But there's no way that can be proven. There's no way that can be suggested in a sound way whenever this bycatch report that was done in 2024 was the first of its kind and really gave us the best idea of what was going on, especially on, you know, on these vessels that were operating out there, actively setting purse seine. So a lot of these arguments that are claiming to make these buffer zones as like this, you know, one size fits all golden ticket to fixing these fisheries are really just these exhaustive claims that are resulting in a lot of false hope and have honestly done a bigger disservice to the management of these resources than anything, because it's led a lot of people astray and kind of put blinders on a lot of people, not allowing them to see the bigger picture of you know, what's actually species management and what's intended to just keep recreational groups and commercial groups from running on top of each other.
I mean, kind of what I'm hearing, Mario, and you can tell me if, you know, if you agree, everybody's claiming to have a silver bullet in this problem. And let's just use common sense and take a look at, you know, fisheries management in general. When is it ever that easy? You know, it's not. And I think that's where my frustration lies with this, is the idea that this buffer zone is going to be a one and done thing, where we've solved so many problems with, you know, half a mile of space is pretty, it should sound too good to be true, really, if you really start kind of unpacking the issue.
I think that's absolutely
where we are.
Absolutely. And like, you think about it, just in a bigger picture, we live in a world of immediate satisfaction. And what that translates to is that we want the fix. We want the fix now. We want a simple fix. And simple and easy and fisheries are really never, ever used in the same sentence together. You know, really, if you talk to a lot of people, fisheries belongs in the same sentence as rocket science. So whenever you're looking at these management approaches, especially at the scale as that Gulf Menhaden is at, and the commercial Gulf Menhaden fishery is at, there cannot be this one size fits all thing, but there's this multifaceted approach that we have to look at, from the species side of things to the human dimension side of things. And so we have to look at how do these actions, you know, impact, like I said, down to the species level, all the way up to the, you know, ecosystem impacts as well as human dimension impacts. And then we have to assess the trade-offs amongst these, you know, potential management applications. And what that could be is, you know, as we'll get talking to this, you know, the amount of that resource that you're removing from the water, i.e. a quota, how many Gulf Menhaden are you removing from the water? What impact does that have on other species, other predatory species that rely on those menhaden? What does the impact of commercial menhaden fishing, as in setting purseines, what impact does that have on benthic habitat and other, you know, coastal habitat, as well as what is the impact of removing non-target species such as red drum, trout, and, you know, the 145 million individuals that are removed through incidental bycatch. So there's a lot of factors that play into this, and it is naive and negligent for, you know, a lot of these people to go out and speak to the masses and say, we had a deal and buffer zones were supposed to fix it all. Now they took it away. We're all doomed, and make everybody believe that these buffer zones were their only hope. So hopefully we can help redirect these thoughts and help people realize that there's other avenues to approaching this for, you know, a more a sustainable and resilient future to managing this fishery.
Well, here's, I appreciate y'all's thoughts. I'm an incredibly simple man at my advancing age. And my thought is just this simple. If you actually have a fishery that doesn't have a quota, and somebody comes up and says, hey, look, there's a lot that we don't know about Gulf Menhaden, and how about we just average your last 5 years, make that your quota until we do, you know, some incredible new groundbreaking stock assessment work, and we can actually base this fishery on science instead of how much your factory can produce. In the meantime, you lose nothing. And with this information, we'll make your fishery sustainable for generations to come. And why would you not want that?
Well, here's why.
Probably because you want to expand your fishery, I'm guessing.
Why would that not be the bare minimum is the thing to me at this point. I mean, what other deal? I mean, I guess you could say sheep's head, which is a whole nother kit and caboodle. But what other thing can you just take unlimited amounts of currently? I mean.
Well, not just take unlimited amounts of it, despite how big the Gulf Menhaden fishery is. Gulf Menhaden are actually one of the most data poor species in the Gulf.
Yeah. Shocking, right?
And so, you know, and we're finally starting to get on the ball with that. There's been a lot of, you know, great studies done on that species, on the Gulf Menhaden species recently, but in relativity, it is a very data poor species. And so it kind of goes back to the theme of negligence to allow a commercial operation to expand in an area that, A, we're still learning new things about the species every day, and we're already seeing the amount that they're taking out of the water. And, you know, we look at neighboring states like Texas, where, you know, Texas, they took the, they created their average based off of five-year average. And it, you kind of look at us where we have the Mississippi River Delta. We have a very nutrient-rich environment for these Gulf menhaden to feed, reproduce, you know, the, you know, their estuarine-dependent species. Like, we have the prime habitat suitability for these species. It's like, we should be the leaders in this Gulf menhaden management thing, rather than kind of sitting on our hands and potentially allowing this commercial operation to expand in front of our eyes, doing the bare minimum.
Well, Mario, I mean, I can understand in this day and age, you know, Louisiana is not in the best shape economically. It is not in the best shape for crime, school systems. You know, it's one of the few states in the South where more people are moving out than moving in. So I can understand the argument about, you know, well, these jobs are important to these coastal areas and we have to defend these jobs. And there's not one part of me that doesn't have empathy for that. But I just wonder where the people were who were saying that in the last, you know, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years when these companies shut down, I believe, 5 to 7 plants. I think maybe even more than 7 factories down in Louisiana over the last in that time frame. So I don't understand. I mean, isn't that a little hypocritical where you're worried about these jobs today, but you weren't worried about the same jobs when 5 times as many plants closed than are currently open right now? Wouldn't that mean that around 5 times as many people lost their jobs in the last 5, 10, 15, 20 years doing this work than have them right now? Like, you can't have your cake and eat it too, right? And I think this was like the most commented on fisheries issue in Louisiana like ever. One of the commissioners noted that he read, you know, somewhere between 800 and 1,000 comments, and not one was in support of the fishery. Not one. So everyone who's listening to this from like the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic is like, I know how those guys feel. Redfish were 300 to 1. You know, stripers were 99, 98, 97% of the comments, and they completely ignored us. You know, it happens everywhere. But what I do think is that they opened up this can of worms by wanting to take something back. And this is our opportunity. When they opened up the can of worms, that door swung open. And we're going to talk about what a sustainable fishery for menhaden actually looks like, if there is such a thing. So if you're going to ask for something, believe you me, we're going to tell you what you need to be doing, because you don't get anything for free in fisheries. Well, this isn't really free for the menhaden industry, because they do have a pipeline of political donations that they, none of this is free.
Deep state menhaden propaganda.
Black ops.
Misinformation campaign. We have to drain the purse in.
Tony and Bailey, kind of touching on the human dimensions aspect of it, what would you think would be the comparison of individuals employed by each sector? A being the commercial menhaden sector, and B being the amount of, say, for hire recreational guides out there that are spatially overlapping.
I mean, if you look at like the spatial overlap, look, you have to include the shipyards that repair the menhaden boats, you know, keep them running, You know, you have to include the hotels that Bailey's clients stay in. You have to include the restaurants that they go to. And I would say, after that study that we did, looking at the impact of just our type of guides, but when you start looking at all the tackle industry, the tourism, everything, I mean, I would probably put it somewhere 1,000 to 1.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think they had every person that could formulate a sentence at that last meeting in support of the Menhaden industry, and there was probably about 20 of them, as opposed to like over 100 people against, at least.
Yeah, I would bet economic impact is probably 1,000 to 1, if you want me to guess.
I mean, there might be people paying to get on the work of purse seine. Maybe we could open up some kind of chartered pogie experience. You can go and coat yourself in fish oil and try to catch each other on the deck of one of the fine Omega vessels.
Well, I bring up that point because, as I mentioned, the human dimensions aspect of it, I think we get too caught up in comparing how many guides are working a boat versus how many people are working a purse seine. But the human dimensions aspect of that is, for every one of those guides, what is beyond them? Like I said, the clients, the small time tackle shops, the economic impact beyond that one guide. So I just wanted to think about that, because that there has been discussions.
Let me just say this. I mean, what you're getting at, to me, a component of what you're saying there is like, and you saw this at the meeting, the Menhaden deployed all of these boat captains that got up there and asked the commission to remove this buffer zone, because they were like little old me fishermen. And, you know, their families rely on this, this buffer zone being eradicated, while the president of their company said they had a financially successful year for business. So to me, what you're getting at is like the large scale economic impact. I mean, we blow them out the freaking water. First of all, I mean, when you talk about what Louisiana is as a fishing destination, a tourist destination, it's pretty much the only thing the state has going for it right now, because we can't even keep, you know, people safe for more than like 10 days in January. The only place you're safe out here is to go fishing, because God forbid you go to New Orleans. But outside of that, the other thing is like this little old me argument. You know, every guide has a family, every guide is feeding a family, and we're all just mom and pop operations. I mean, I'm over here, I don't have a president of the company I work for that's getting up on the podium and saying, we had a good financial year, while I'm complaining about the redfish regulations. It's just me up there. You know, I represent ASGA, but, Tony ain't swinging the same kind of money that the pogie industry isn't swinging around. So, you know, it's kind of hits different when it was actually, it's like insulting to me. And it was said in one of these podcasts leading up to that meeting about how these like Menhaden captains are somehow more mom and pop, small town than like, you know, whoever the hell, Frankie Filet down there at Shell Beach, who literally feeds his family by filleting speckled trout that other guides are catching. Like, come on. I mean, the economic impact locally and on a national level, it blows the Menhaden out the water, I would say.
I would agree. And that's what I wanted to point out. Because that often gets overridden by the argument that we both know of, that we all know of.
So so they opened this can of worms. We don't want the buffer zone. And we came back and hit them with basically, they opened this up by saying, give this back to us. And in my world of fisheries that I've operated in for a long time, you don't get something for nothing. There's no science. No new science that says that they can catch more. There's nothing. And they want to burn less fuel, fish these areas essentially so they can be more profitable. So you don't get to do that unless you give something in return. So we basically gave them a pretty long list of what a good fishery looks like. So, you know, first and foremost, as we've said, this fishery does not need to expand until there is a incredibly robust stock assessment done on Menhaden. And that is far, 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 far into the future in the Gulf. So we need a quota. That's first and foremost. Second of all, you know, if you're going to spend all this money on a bycatch study, I would suggest that you engage and, you know, actually use what you learn, not just quote numbers from it. So, Mario, do you want to get into the devices that they need to put on these vessels to address the 140 something million fish that are killed each year through this practice?
I'll be your Huckleberry. All right. So you said you're a simple man, Tony. To me, I don't think an individual up to 63 inches should ever fit up a suction hose. And right now, there's 63 inches.
That's even dangerous for Bailey.
Yeah, that's a full Bailey going up that suction hose. That's two of me going
full
up the suction hose.
Bailey.
I can tell you that.
No one can handle that, not even a suction hose. I'm going to nuke that thing from the inside if they suck. Wait a minute. That's the option. We're going to run Operation Menhaden Mayhem, and they're going to put me in scuba gear and let me get sucked up, and it'll be some kind of like South Park. I'm not going to reference the episode, but I'll hit them with a nuke from the inside. It's Whale Wars.
With those flowing locks, man, you are absolutely the fastest kid on the slip and slide.
I can't risk getting them tangled up in the suction hose.
Morgan, are you going to go with the Bahamian bead braid, or
yeah,
what are you going to do?
I'm going to do some Viking like iron beads.
Oh, I could see that. I could see the iron beads,
they
man.
They can double as a weapon. I can bludgeon anybody that gets close to me.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But no, you're good. But so pretty much the gist of it is, in the sampled vessels through a PCA analysis, which is literally just looking at variation among the sampled vessels of the specs, sizes of the hose cages, which these suction hoses they put in the purse, saying they're fitted with a bycatch excluder device called a hose cage fit at the end of the suction hose. Hose cage is meant to reduce the amount of bycatch that enters that suction hose. So among the sampled vessels, they saw, you know, around a 70% variation in hose cage dimensions among those vessels. You know, up to a 63-inch individual, based on those dimensions, could enter those suction hoses, which you think 63 inches. How many people have caught a 63-inch red drum speckled trout? Anything like, how often are you?
Mr.
How
Chocolate?
Often, so it's like, it, like so word? You got to think about it, and you're like, that hose cage dimension really isn't keeping any of those red drum out. It's not keeping any of the speckled trout out.
Mario, there's a long history of fisheries that have to use extruder devices. This is essentially a cap that goes on the thing that makes sure Menhaden's a pretty small fish, and if the fish don't go up the hose, they have a lot better chance of survival. Now, Bailey said we're going to rig him out with scuba gear. He'll be fine. He'll be absolutely fine, but the fish, not so much. So,
the fish, not so much.
Not so much. Good to go, especially if he braids his hair.
the average size redfish that was ending up as shoot bycatch, which shoot bycatch is the individuals that get sucked up the suction hose. It was like 35, 36 inches. And that's very alarming, because in the survival study that was done in the bycatch study, redfish redfish were reported to have an 83% survival, estimated survival, by those that were rolled over the purse seine, as in the ones not sucked up the suction hose. The ones that were sucked up the suction hose and became shoot bycatch had a 2% survival rate. So we're talking about your big mamas, we're talking about your breeders, your spawners, whatever you want to call them, your spawning stock. You're looking at a difference between an 83% estimated survival and a 2% estimated survival simply based upon whether they get sucked up that suction hose or not. And we saw this similar trend occur for several other species as well. We saw individuals up to 63 inches or so getting included as shoot bycatch, which means they got through that hose cage and up to suction hose. I mean, we're talking about juvenile blacktip sharks, bull sharks, things of that nature.
Mario, let me ask you this. Did anything survive the suction hose decently?
No.
A catfish?
The catfish had the highest estimated survival we saw. It was like 30%, 35%. But
see,
I mean, that's a
one out
that's
of
a
every
catfish.
Three catfish can survive this thing. It's a bad news bear situation.
Yeah.
You can't kill those things.
And look, my thing is
I've tried.
I mean, to me, this is sticking out like a flashing sign saying, hey, look at me, because it's like, hey, we're not stepping on the toes of the commercial fishery here. We're simply just saying, hey, you have 70%, an estimated 70% variation among your hose cage dimensions. How about we standardize that so we reduce that variation, as well as can we do something about, I know you're trying to, you know, maximize efficiency and get as many menhaden up that suction hose as possible, you know, efficiency, whatever. But I mean, there's absolutely no reason that a 63-inch individual should be able to fit through that hose cage up that suction hose.
There is a very long history of turtle extruding devices, you know, a million different things to minimize bycatch. And they can tout, you know, that their bycatch as a percentage is small, but any percentage of a billion is substantial. So point here is we shouldn't, as Bailey said before, you know, you're talking bare minimum. Like, are we actually having a discussion that you shouldn't be sucking a five foot fish or a Bailey into your hose, and when you could just add a piece of equipment to your vessel? Furthermore, you know, when they pull these purses up to the boat, they should be dipping the net and letting these fish out at the net. Anyway,
opinion. I mean, I find that just wild that we're sitting here, like you said. What I was just going to say, listening to Mario talk about this, is, you know, bare minimum, the amount of variation. I mean, you know, I guess in life there's big suction hoses, there's small suction hoses, and, you know, who are we to shame one on the size of their suction hose? But I'm like, why is there just not some kind of industry standard? And we hold them to that. That seems pretty enforceable.
This whole conversation kind of circles back as to the main focus has been on that dead horse that's been beaten over and over, which is buffer zones. There hasn't been, like, why haven't
all this,
like,
other low hanging fruit?
Yeah, I mean, it's like look, I mean,
houses.
We have the you know, we're talking about bycatch excluder devices here in the hose cage, you know, standardizing the hose cage dimensions, things like that. But still, there's
suction
been this
hose on camera.
So that actually brings us up to our last point. We went through this, you know, we had the analogy of how attentive of a driver were you during your driving test. And what happened when you got the keys of your first car and were on your own on the highway? You probably didn't drive the same as your driver's test. I know, maybe I'm projecting, but I think I remember going like 130 miles an hour down the highway within like 20 minutes of leaving my house after I got the license. So what we saw with the bycatch was the absolute best possible scenario because you got observers on the boat, you got all this science going on. They're probably not setting their nets on, you know, a big school of menhaden that has a big school of redfish on it, if I had to guess. And you're just on your best behavior. So there's one real easy way, I think, to deal with all of this and put cameras on their boats. Really not that expensive. Give them Starlink, put a couple of cameras on the boat, and you can absolutely positively see what's coming through. And, you know, here's the kicker. You don't have to have like some intern or low level, you know, first year biologist coming in to sit there and count the fish. You could probably run it through an AI program and it would give you a pretty honest count and species. So that is basically what we would be looking for from the fishery. Rather than, you know, pay massive observer costs or another study, if you're not doing anything wrong, then why don't we just put a camera on your boat and then we can count the fish? That's number one. If you're not going to expand the fishery, then why are you so opposed to a quota? I don't know, just a thought. So there's a lot of stuff that really, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. If it walks like a duck, if it quacks like a duck. So part of me is actually happy because this buffer zone, we all know, wasn't going to save anything. I'm going to put up buffers. I'm going to close 1,500 feet for a fishery that doesn't have a quota, and that's going to make everything okay. I mean, just think of that on the surface. It's pretty frustrating. That's going to save redfish. Like, I don't know who really would believe that it could stand any kind of logical rigor that would make a difference. I don't think it does. So when we're saying the stuff that we didn't laundry list and just make a lot of outlandish claims, we actually just want to get this fishery in line. So hopefully one day we could have a stock assessment because, you know, the fishery's not going away tomorrow. I can promise you that. No matter what anyone thinks. So you have to think long term in this game. So use the proper bycatch devices, standardize those, make them mandatory. Let's get some cameras on the boats. Let's get a quota. And I'm just having a brain fart. There's one other, don't move the buffer zones either. Like,
I think the camera should have a live feed that gets posted online.
Oh, that ought to go over well.
And then
menhadenmayhem.org.
Menhaden Monitor Mayhem. And then you can vote on individual fish's odds of surviving the suction hose. The online betting just got legalized here in Louisiana. Let's go crazy.
I think something to note here too for the listeners mainly is you know, the numbers that we've thrown around in the past, like the 145 million individuals that are caught up in total bycatch, things of that nature, like this is simply based off of 13,144 sets that were sampled, which came out to be what, 2-3% of total sets through that year. And it wasn't even on all of the vessels that fished that year. So, I mean, we're simply like in the scope of this, we're really only getting a snapshot of what's going on here. And it's like, if you think back to the commission meeting, whenever Dr. Rayborn, who's the lead scientist on the bycatch study, was called to the podium, which seemed unexpectedly by Chairman Segrera at the time, he pretty much held him to the fire and was like, hey, are these buffer zones, you know, what are these buffer zones doing? Like, are these buffer zones reducing incidental bycatch? And he was up there and he was like, well, if you want an explicit answer, no. And the commercial industry took that as a win because they were like, the lead scientist of the study said that the buffer zones aren't reducing incidental bycatch. Like, you know, put the pedal to the metal. Let's go ahead and reduce these buffer zones. And, you know, just to put that into perspective, you know, Dr. Rayburn, he's correct. Yeah, those buffer zones, they're not reducing incidental bycatch because, as we've mentioned over and over and over and over, they're not intended to. They're meant to reduce benthic habitat. They're meant to reduce impact to benthic habitat, which simply means push them further off into deeper water where their persanes won't just destroy the bottom of the seafloor, and as well as reduce spatial overlap between, you know, your recreational fishermen and your commercial industry. Well, you know, the existing buffer zones, let's look at how well they've done either one of those. They haven't done either one of those very well. So the reason we're making these additional points is because we shouldn't just be fighting to keep the existing buffer zones, but we need to really expand the scope of what we're conversating about in regards to managing this fishery. That's why we're talking about the hose gauge dimensions, the onboard cameras, the quota. And it just kind of all ties back into each other. Is, you know, this is a complex issue, and there is no one size fits all for it. And so we just got to come together. We got to keep the heat on it. That's all we can do. And, you know, Tony, what's really interesting is the way it's worded on the website is that the NOI, the new NOI, will reduce existing buffer zones from a half mile to a quarter mile from some specified areas. But these adjustments contained within the NOI increases the existing square miles of buffer by 4.32%, from approximately 264 square miles to approximately 276 square miles of natural waters, which I see that as a blatant point that will be made in opposition, saying, well, you know, y'all wanted the existing buffer zones, but we're really just giving you more buffer area. And that's probably coming from them putting a buffer around Chandelier Islands and that thing. But,
well, you heard them lobbying for the Menhaden guys at the meeting. I mean, yeah.
There's some trickery.
They're talking about people losing their jobs.
Yeah.
And that ain't happening. Another commissioner corrected him on that point, I'd like to note. That's not happening. No one's losing their jobs.
That's why I wanted to bring it up here and just kind of put it on record, because,
well,
it's
when the commission is having to pass something that they have overwhelming disapproval of, I guess they have to bake in a little, but wait, you guys are actually winning on the back end, where that's just not the case. I mean, you know, I think it was Commissioner Walker, I think, had some great points at the end of that meeting, which I commend any of them having anything cohesive to say, because they just sat there and got yelled at for like 2 hours long. But yeah, Jonathan Walker had some great points. I thought he addressed the reality of it, which was like pretty much everybody here doesn't want to do this. And, I've never seen so much overwhelming disapproval for something. He said something to that effect. It is interesting when you see that wording in there trying to sugarcoat this thing that nobody wants.
And it's really interesting, because like you said, it's like you show up to the, you know, you conversate with the commissioners and you know, obviously, you know, other people, you know, with the public, especially at the commission meeting that, you know, that's to be had eventually. And it's like, well, you know, well, technically we're giving you 4.32% more, you know, or increasing it from 264 to, what was it, 276 square mileage. So it's like, really, it's a win-win, you know? And it's like, no, it's not a win-win. You just went and threw some buffer zones like out there, you know, around the Chandelier Islands, whatever, you know, it's like,
This gets back to me, is when stuff like this happens, it's a result of them being able to do things with constituents and anglers and recreational fishermen and guides that are uneducated about the issue. And it is why I'm very thankful ASGA and Tony and everybody's really, we've really tried to educate people about this issue, because it is so much more complex than just you know, yes or no to a buffer zone. And this is how this kind of stuff passes, is with a populace that doesn't understand the issue. And so it really does take people spending a little time listening to a podcast, reading, you know, reading some comment from an association that's not selling out. And that's what people got to do, plain and simple. As long as they don't do that, we're going to do stupid crap over and over again like this.
And okay, like, man. What, babe, Mario, what were you going to say, buddy?
No, just real quick. I like what Bailey said. I mean, it's what you say, Tony, what we all say, you know, just emphasizing on educating. You know, this isn't a popularity contest. You know, we're not trying to sell a truck here. We're trying to educate people and, you know, help people
or sell raffle tickets for a truck, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to help people understand
our Rolex.
What is going on? What is the topic at hand, and why are we so passionate about this? And why do we take the stance that we take? And it's not because we're just feeding a bunch of word salad, but we're really trying to educate these people so that we can build a strong foundation, you know, in Louisiana and beyond, so that we can promote sustainable and resilient fisheries through the passion, through these grassroots passionate efforts, you know, from the people that are out there every day to the, you know, to the parents that get to take their kids out once a year. It's just about conserving the resources and what you're passionate about, and ultimately just doing the right thing. I mean, the commission is the switchboard. They are the switchboard for the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries. It is their ultimate job to listen to their constituents and make the decision that is in the best interest of the state of Louisiana. I mean, that's their job. That's what it comes down to. And whenever you see the entire state of Louisiana show up in that room and flood their emails saying, we want this fishery to be managed better, it is now, the ball is now in their court. The weight is on their shoulders for them to say, all right, this is bigger than buffer zones. What are we going to do? What are these next steps that we take instead of folding under pressure? So we just got to keep applying that pressure and keep educating and coming together.
So here we go, right? It's Jay Adriance. J, A as in Adam, D R I A N C E at my screen won't open at WLF.LA.gov, and it's January 23rd, 3 p.m. in the year of our Lord 2026. It's the first time I've said that because it's a new year. So we got to get these comments in. Again, this will go to that first commission meeting in February. And if it gets through that commission meeting, then it goes to the legislature. So that means the potential for more letters, more conversation. And what I will tell you is, I know this is going to sound crazy, but they lost by one vote on the commission to get this thing out. And what I would say is the commissioners who voted to not push the buffer zone back actually listened to people. And they made that statement, like, you know, one of them said he was a duck hunter, and if they were talking about what day duck season was going to open on, and he had 1,000 comments saying don't do it on this day, he would never dream of doing that, even if that's what he wanted to do. And I think that's why you're a commissioner. I think that's really, really important, and I have a lot of respect for that person who did that. So I will tell you, they do actually listen. And basically, you got to flip one vote. So this is absolutely worth your time. These are things that need to be addressed. I have the same fear as Bailey has, that people are going to be like, if we, you know, if we win, that's almost, I don't know, it's almost like not the greatest win, because all these other issues that we brought up will never be addressed. So we cannot let this die. We have to keep the heat on. And we have to make sure that this fishery is managed, because right now it is not managed. And that's a crying shame. I don't know how else. It's not. And if anyone wants to debate me on that, you know where to find me and I'll get you on the podcast, because this is essentially an unmanaged fishery. And that's kind of unbelievable at this day and age. So thank both you chuckleheads for getting on here at the last second. We are going to have all this stuff on the website up shortly. For anyone who managed to listen this long, Monday the 12th, there's a hearing in Rhode Island on false albacore and bonito management. So we are marching down the coast with that effort. There'll be more stuff on the website about that. If you're a Rhode Island angler, 5 o'clock on the 12th, they're gonna have that workshop, and hopefully we can get these regulations on the books for the 2027 season. So appreciate everyone listening. Thank you, Bailey and Mario, and let's go Louisiana Menhaden. All right, gentlemen.